from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a time to begin looking back at what we have wrought, or what has been wrought upon us. Yes, it is the beginning, part one of 2005, the year in rebuke. However, there will be, whatever there is. But this year, the early part of this year especially, had an awful lot of to-ing and fro-ing on the subject of journalism. And much of it was set off by the story of Jeff Gannon, a.k.a. James Guckert. Jeff Gannon was spotted as a sympathetic Bush questioner at the White House news conferences, and some enterprising bloggers searched his website, where they saw that he was also, he had a different identity as a male escort, offering male escort services. Nobody knows if he actually had any takers, but he was offering. So the story of Jeff Gannon, a.k.a. James Guckert, how he got into the White House to ask those questions, how he got recognized by Scott McClellan, how the whole escort reporter thing played out, began a long and interesting debate on journalism in America. And that's our first topic today on the Year in Rebuke edition of Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Gannon. Hey, Jeff here, blogging my thoughts about my days and my nights. Yesterday was mondo busy as well as bizay. I'd barely logged on, and I do mean barely, to see if I'd had any takers at hotmilitarystud.com when a lot more than my brain came to attention. 2 hours later, I was counting my blessings and my hundreds in a really nice Georgetown house under the watchful gaze of a congressman I knew only as the bottom.
Oh, God, this is weird.
Hey, dude, this is the only thong I own.
No, I mean, you look even odder in person than you do on your website.
Well, you know what they say. Mm-hmm. The internet adds 20 pounds. So, what's your pleasure?
Oh, I was sort of thinking you'd tell me, being the top and all.
Gotcha. Okay, let's start off real drill instructor style here. MAGA, drop to the floor and give me 20 of your best.
Question?
Well, look, this scenario doesn't really...
No, I know. I just... 20 what?
Oh, sorry. Push-ups. And sorry about saying sorry, Tops. Tops, don't do that. Okay, maggot, drop. You call those push-ups? You should be wearing a push-up bra.
You're right.
Not only that... Oh, man, sorry, I have to take this. Just keep it up and try not to look so freaking Nelly. Gannon here.
Jeff, it's Mr. R.
Hey, yeah, man, what up?
We've got a press briefing in an hour. Helen Thomas is loaded for bear. We gotta have you here to, you know, balance things out.
Oh, but I'm right in the middle of...
17. 18.
Jeff, what could possibly be more important than covering a presidential press briefing for Talon News?
Well, you know, when you put it that way...
19!
After all, we agreed this would be your top priority.
Yeah, you're right. Top priority.
Uh-huh.
20!
Hold on. Okay, maggot. Now it gets interesting. Close your eyes.
Before our friend on the floor knew what was coming down, I'd blindfolded him, jammed my spare cell phone earpiece into his ear, and made it down to street level in time to hail a cab for the Casablanca. Unfortunately, my taxi seemed to be a demonstration project for the administration's guest worker program.
I am telling you, I cannot enter the White House complex without some kind of hard pass. Hard pass, you understand?
Yeah, Omar, I do understand. After all, I'm the one who was born here. Just make a left at the barricade.
Look, here's what I understand. In case you haven't noticed, my skin is darker than Sag Ghost. I turn a direction the Secret Service doesn't like. I've got a head start on being reincarnated.
Nothing's gonna happen to you, dude. Just tell him it's Jeff Gannon from Talon News.
Talon News?
Mm-hmm.
What is that, some kind of magazine for bird finches?
Do me a favor, Sanjay. Just zip it and drive it. I've got softball to play.
I figured my new best friend, the congressman back in Georgetown, was still too scared and happy to be wondering why he hadn't heard from me in half an hour. And when I did come up in his earpiece, he'd see why it was worth the extra $200. Meanwhile, back in the cab, shaking like a leaf, Gupta let me off at the White House private entrance.
Here you go, pal.
$100? Thank you.
Yeah. Don't spend it all on ghee.
10 minutes later, I was sitting so close to Bill Plant, I could smell his chewing gum. We'd just gotten the 2-minute warning for the briefing.
Excuse me, Mr. Plant.
Mm-hmm.
I know this sounds stupid, but I forgot my notebook.
Jeff, again?
Yeah, I know. The people at Talon News are gonna have my ass in a sling, if not the rest of me. You couldn't just...
I think CBS News can spare a notebook. Just barely. There you go.
Thanks.
So, they rough on you over at Talon News?
Oh, slave drivers. Just like your own fearless leaders.
Yeah, right. Mm. Hey, how about those Yanks?
Bill, I'm surprised at you. I was clear to those charges.
Even for a hard-bitten newsman like me, there's still a thrill when halfway through a difficult news conference, the great Mr. Scott McClellan turns to me for a question. Yesterday, with Bill Plant looking at me kind of sideways, I knew I was going to have to deliver big time.
Yes, Jeff.
Scott, with the Democrats having no real plan except to obstruct the president's agenda, who's really the enemy of bipartisan cooperation in this town? And...
Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, 1 second. And what does the president feel like doing about it?
Good question.
And you, maggot. Give me 100 more push-ups, now.
Oh, more push-ups?
You okay, Jeff? He's answering your question.
Ha! Fine, Bill. Thanks. Never better.
Back in Georgetown, my congressman friend had passed out trying to give me 100 of his best. So when my cab dropped me back off at his building, I just ran upstairs to work up a sweat, then lay on top of his body. When he came to, I collected my $2,000 and called it a night. I guess you could say yesterday I was really on top of the news. I guess that's why I call me Gannon.
Is a journalist. He's a hard-drinking, soft-spoken, burn-up-some-shoe-leather, but sit-on-his-hiney sort of son of a gun, or daughter of a gun, who's seen it all before and can't wait to see it all again. A journalist is someone who gets shot at in a war zone so that he can report back material that can't be broadcast because it might be too disturbing. A journalist is someone who reads teleprompter better than anybody and writes better than the guy who just won the Pulitzer. Journalists like deadlines, bylines, a bigger news hole, free food. Journalists don't like deadlines, editors, cramped press facilities at major news events, media whores. Journalists like to know, how does it feel? And what's the mood here? Journalists don't like to know how the Social Security system really works. A journalist is often found at news conferences, presidential visits, crime scenes, hospice vigils, and the sites of major recent snowfalls. A journalist is seldom found advertising his services on a website for gay escorts. Journalists sometimes make too much money getting out of the studio too seldom, so they can mingle with other journalists who are resentful because they never get into the studio at all. Journalists can be anchors, but never sales. They can be reporters or just repeaters. A journalist looks down on celebrities until the day he becomes one. A journalist spends too much time covering a story that gets too little space, so it can be skimmed by a reader with too little time. Journalists can't resist miracle puppies, children trapped in wells, killer bees. Journalists almost always resist stories with three or more sides, computer terminals without a Nexus account, angles that might make their colleagues think they're flaky. A journalist will fly halfway around the world to stand where a tsunami took place, and he'll stand in freezing rain for 2 hours to point out that it's winter time. Journalists are more curious than anybody, attacked by everybody, and lent money by nobody. A journalist will share a quote, but won't reveal a source. A journalist thinks the First Amendment is the only one the founders really meant. What is a journalist? A journalist is someone who earned pretty good money telling us what was really going on in the world, until he realized he could earn better money by telling us about the social lives of the people who earn really great money, telling us fairy tales about the world. A journalist knows who's got the best Rolodex, who's got the best satellite phone circuits, how much backlight he needs. A journalist doesn't know where to find Kyrgyzstan on a map, where to find the smart people in a small town, how you're supposed to fit a 5-minute story into a 90-second hole. A journalist is just like the rest of us, except he's more tenacious, lazier, sloppier, got better hair, and does his best work in the comfort of the herd. What is a journalist? Next time you see one, just ask him, how does it feel?
You thrilled to American Idol. You've screamed for America's Next Top Model. You've been in office pools on the winner of Dream Job. And you've wondered, what's next?
Howdy, Hoss. I'm Hurricane Dan. Welcome to America's Next News Anchor.
20 contestants, 10 grueling weeks, 17 different challenges, 64 sponsorship tie-ins. But who's counting? This is the way the rest of the century will get its news.
I'm Dusty. I'm a bartender from Boulder, Colorado. And next to satellite sports, I like news the best.
I'm John Roberts. I'm a CBS News White House correspondent. And this job is mine.
I'm Amber. I'm a Miss Wyoming runner-up, double major in hospitality and journalism at BYU. And have I got news for you.
I'm Scott Pelley. I'm a correspondent on 60 Minutes. And if I don't get this job, I'm going back to local news in Dallas.
I'm a Kia. I'm a pro wrestler. I'm the editor of the Pro Wrestler's Newsletter. And I'm going to stomp all over the news. Plus, I'm half black.
You've never seen anything like it. And you've seen everything like it.
Okay, folks, here we are. Makeover Central. You're going to kiss your old hair goodbye. Not literally.
I'm Darby. This is my first confessional. I guess I wasn't expecting the other competitors to be this, competitive. I sometimes feel like the whole game is, let's pull Darby's ego to pieces, but I just gotta keep my focus nailed to that AP wire.
I'm Tuliria, and I'm reporting live from rain-drenched Kabul.
Cue the rain machine.
Oh, crap, I'm frizzing up.
Look, I'll live in a house with you amateurs, and I'll put up with your crap. But I'm not cleaning up after your beer can.
Hey, dude, lighten up. You know, it's just the news.
It all leads up to the heart-stopping final championship episode, where two finalists try to anchor live coverage of the Pope's funeral. And every week, it's your vote that decides who stays and who has to take the long walk out through local news.
I guess I always assumed that, there'd be years of climbing up through the system, and there were, so no argument. But, never in my wildest dreams did I think it would lead to this.
This sucks. Triumph, heartbreak, and headlines delivered from a tank full of maggots.
John Bolton passed his first test on the road to nomination. Man, these things are freaking me out big time.
Come for the fun, stay for the news and the fun. Bet you can't watch just one episode. We'll see you right here.
America's next news anchor from Murrowspin Productions. Coming Tuesdays to CBS. We're breaking news.
This is Le Show, the year in rebuke. And ladies and gentlemen, wasn't it just last week that I called for this? And here it is. Was it just last week? Did I predict this or did I actually make it happen? Dateline New Orleans. The same group that offers visitors a chance to drive by some of New Orleans' massive old homes will soon allow them to see some mass devastation. Gray Line New Orleans next month will begin a Hurricane Katrina bus tour, taking visitors through some of the city's hardest hit areas. The tour will cost $35, with $3 going to a nonprofit group directly affected by the storm. Some city residents say the company is exploiting a tragedy. One man says the company is treating Katrina's wreckage like a theme park. Man not quoted by the AP. One man. That's good reporting, AP. The company's general manager, also not named, says people wouldn't fully understand the scope of the damage until they saw it for themselves. True enough. Did I just predict that, or did I make it happen? Ladies and gentlemen, this year, of course, saw maybe the biggest celebrity story of the year, the Michael Jackson trial in Santa Maria, California, where he was found not guilty of whatever it was. The jury selection process was enlivened by, first of all, it was faster than expected, which was a good sign for somebody. Then there was the question of whether the jurors would be affected by the list of celebrity witnesses that were supposed to be called, although some of them never were. Most of them never were, in fact. One of the jurors was asked during selection if he recognized the list of celebrity witnesses in the case, including the Asian self-help guru Deepak Chopra. The juror responded, quote, "I think he's a rapper."
Yo, testifying in the trial of Mickey J. I'm Deepak, mystifying your day, getting you spiritualized through spiritualize and sending it all to your cellular phone. I'm waiting, not hating, mega meditating. I'm with you right now, and I'm all alone. That's a paradox, like timeless clocks, like egg-laying cocks, if you know what I mean. I tune out the mental static, I'm the mind's Vegematic, and you'll always find me at the hip scene. So serene at the scene, as if my mind's just a screen, and I'm its projector. Caveat lector, and there is no keener specter than a mountain of green. Cut a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. Cut a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. Down at La Costa, you can come see me. Nothing seamy or unseemly, just gentle yoga and sashimi. Golf and tennis and hints of a gangster past. Now the place is less exciting than a Lutheran fast. I practice perfect health and I offer perfect weight. Tell your mind to say it and your body will follow. Visualize yourself as hollow, that would be 6 pills. But think of all the money I've saved you on pills. Cut a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. Cut a lot of huts for natural serenity. natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify. Deepakify.
Then, of course, the trial actually occurred, didn't it? I think it did. And Michael Jackson was found not guilty, even though some jurors later explained that they regretted their verdict. You can pull back your verdict if you're a juror, can't you, in this state? At that point, there was a lot of reporting about what would happen to Michael Jackson at that point in the future. He has ended up, as you may know, if you care, in the Gulf Arab Emirate of Bahrain at the moment. He's singing in Bahrain, that's right. Even though one of the earliest reports that came out quoted him as saying unequivocally that he was planning to move to Berlin because, among other reasons, he really loved the Berlin Zoo.
Show looking back at some of what happened in 2005. We're going to look back at some of the fashion trends that were what? It's what we're in the middle. What line? Two? Okay, thanks. We have a call on the Newsmaker line right now. Hi. You're on the air.
Yes, hello, Mr. Shearer.
Shearer, yes. Hi, this is...
Who would you think it would be that mispronounces your name so consistently?
Shab-Shab.
Yes.
This would be Shab-Shab,
this
yes?
This would be, this is to be Shab-Shab, yes. Hello.
Hi, this Shab-Shab, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you not regular listeners or are part of our Philadelphia fan base, Shab-Shab is a former...
Yes.
Saddam Hussein lookalike,
yes.
Made his living as a Saddam Hussein lookalike during the deposed dictator's regime.
Very good living, too.
And has since been making some guest appearances at social events as Saddam lookalike and also selling, I believe, high-end stereo gear. Is that right, Shab-Shab?
High-end stereo gear of a very high order, Mr. Shearer.
Mm-hmm.
I sell one speaker system. I pay my rent for 2 months. That's high-end.
That is very high-end.
Yes.
How many have you sold?
I've sold none. This is Iraq.
Wow.
But that's not why I'm calling today. I'm not calling to bitch about my commercial prospects, Mr. Shearer.
All right. What are you calling to bitch about today, Shab-Shab?
I like your sense of fair play.
Thank you.
Mr. Shearer,
yeah.
You know we have a trial of Saddam Hussein now taking place, so-called trial taking place in Baghdad.
Yes, I know about that. You also have the parliamentary elections coming up, so it's...
Please, Mr. Shearer, do not insult me with your jokes and japes.
No,
yes, we have the trial, the so-called trial of Saddam Hussein.
So-called trial.
And... It is so disturbing to me, Mr. Shearer.
Really?
This is a travesty. This is an insult to a supposedly sovereign nation.
Well,
sir,
yeah.
I demand your attention to this.
No, you've got my attention, Shab-Shab.
Right.
Exactly what is the... Do you not feel it's going to be a fair trial? Do you object to Saddam Hussein's... sort of dramatic flourishes. Do you object to the killing of two of the defense attorneys?
Mr. Shearer,
yeah.
These are details. These are distractions. These are what beguile the three-year-old attention span of the American media. I am talking about basic things, basic problems, underlying structural defects in the so-called trial.
All right, such as?
Such as, how do you see this trial?
Well,
did you see it because it's on television?
That's right.
Correct, Mr. Shearer?
That's correct.
Why do you think that's happening?
Well,
that is happening not because the Iraqi government so decided. This was decided in Washington, D.C., Mr. Shearer.
All right.
You know this.
Well,
this is a show trial.
Mm-hmm.
This is a television show made for domestic consumption in the United States and for the few people in Iraq who have the luxury of electricity.
Okay, and you think this is a bad thing?
I do not, sir. Please do me the privilege and the honor as a frequent guest on your program of not putting inaccurate words in my mouth.
All right. Consider that done.
Correct.
So you object to this trial because...
Mr. Shearer, it is a show.
Yeah.
If you are going to put on a show, you want the best cast. Do you not?
Yes.
That's what you do in your business.
Well, what...
why would you have... a Saddam Hussein show trial without the best Saddam Hussein impersonator or look-alike characterizator, if you may, as the starring role?
Well, you've got
Why would you have a man who spends 6 months in a spider role and doesn't even remember what Saddam Hussein acts like, looks like, talks like? I mean, this is a travesty. This is a joke.
Yeah, but that is Saddam Hussein. I mean, that's why you have him there. That's the guy who's on trial.
Mr. Shearer, I'm not talking about the courtroom. I'm talking about the television. Why would you have that man on the television? Why would you have the camera in the courtroom?
Well,
why would you not have a professionally lit and designed, shot, and performed recreation? This would be the time to do that, sir.
Well, I presume the reason for having the camera in the courtroom is so people will believe that it's real, isn't that?
Mr. Shearer, there was a camera on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Still, most of the people in the world don't believe man walks on the moon.
Well,
do you see what I'm saying? The best television you can do is the best television, not so-called reality. Why, this is straight out of Survivor, sir, not out of any sense of justice or appropriateness or what people would believe. What people would believe is a man who spent his life, who spent his entire adult life learning how to project the character and the image of Saddam Hussein, a man who did not spend 6 months in a spider hole, you know, searching for grubs to eat.
Really? Is that what he did?
How should I know what he did?
Well,
I'm saying, look at the angle, Mr. Sharir, of the courtroom camera.
Right.
It's all you see. It's so far above. Mm. You see not faces, not drama. Mm. You see bald spots, Mr. Sharir.
Yeah.
When Saddam walked out of the room,
but
you didn't see the anguish in his face.
Well,
you see, instead, sir, where he's been applying shoe polish to his pate.
To his pate?
Yes.
Well, Shab, so what you're suggesting is that we should instead have a recreation a la the Michael Jackson trial?
A la whatever, sir. Michael Jackson, I feel sorry for that poor lookalike because Michael Jackson, of course, never
testified.
In this case, it's totally different.
Mm-hmm.
This is a trial about Saddam.
Mm-hmm.
It features Saddam.
Mm-hmm.
I'm suggesting, not to hide my light under a bushel,
of course.
I would be the one to perform as Saddam. But that is for the
casting director.
I'm saying now there's a two-week hiatus for your holiday.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time to make the change. The trial would be in English. The angles would be perfect. The lighting would be great. You could cut and, you know, hone and distill.
Yeah.
It would be fabulous.
All right. So, Shab, you're suggesting what? I mean, you're in Iraq. I'm here.
Yes. You're where the decisions are made about this, sir. Don't be joking with me. You know people, you go to parties, you say two words, Shab, play Saddam.
That's
and,
three words.
Presto, it happens as if by magic.
Mm-hmm.
I know how this works. We know, we study your country, sir, we know how it works. So please, I'm telling you, for this is a show trial for your benefit. Do it right, do it with Shab.
All right, you seem a little over-caffeinated today, if I may.
I'm giddy with the progress in this country, sir.
You are?
Yes. The excellence of the security situation is making me lightheaded.
All right. So, Shab, you want us to have a recreation of the Saddam trial as opposed to the supposedly actual footage, and you would like to be in consideration for the role of Saddam, and that's what I should tell the people at the parties that I'm going to.
Mr. Sharir, let's be realistic.
Okay.
Let's be ultra-realistic.
Okay.
This man is going to be executed.
Yeah.
That will not be on television.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lookalike for the rat anyway.
Mm.
So why not? Why change horses in fate?
I see. So you're saying the guy that gets hanged should be the guy that we've seen in the courtroom set.
Bingo, sir. Please.
All right. Shab, I'll do my best. Thank you for the call. How are things otherwise?
New shipment of British high-end subwoofers hijacks on the way into town.
No, so that's the good news and the bad news.
Yes.
Shab, thank you for calling in on the Newsmaker line today.
Yes.
And I don't want to participate in the war on Christmas, so I'll just say happy celebration of whatever you're celebrating.
Thank you, Mr. Sharir. And look, if I get the job, I'll wear a necktie. It'll be better looking Saddam than what you're getting now.
All right. Shab on our Newsmaker line, ladies and gentlemen, as we continue the year in rebuke.
Now, a special almost live edition of Larry King Weekend.
We're in New York City tonight. I'll be emceeing the National Library Foundation's Take a Book, Please Ball later this week. Tomorrow night, we got Scott Peterson's First Gym Teacher. Tonight, an old friend of this program from our Chicago studio to Reverend Jesse Jackson. Jesse, just watching you the last couple of weeks, gotta say, if the Bush organization is getting your frequent flyer miles, they're in pretty good shape, my friend.
Thanks, Larry, and yes, there would be.
Mm.
But unfortunately, the airlines have some very archaic rules about things like that, as well as some seats that weren't built for a grandfather's frame.
But, Reverend Jackson, you were down in Florida for much of the last week, praying with and working on behalf of the parents of the late Terry Schiavo.
Yes, I was, Larry. They were wonderful. They are wonderful people, and I'm sure the daughter was wonderful people as well.
How did all that come about?
Larry, watching that case from Santa Maria where I was fellowshipping with Michael Jackson, I saw two things. I saw people hurting, and I saw cameras in need.
Now, you say you saw cameras in need. Mm-hmm. What were they in need of?
People of goodwill.
Mm.
There was so much anger, so much rage down there, Larry.
Yeah.
As you know, it seemed to me that there was a need for people less interested in vindication and more interested in syndication. There was a need for people less interested in winning am more interested in chinning.
Excuse me, Jesse. What exactly does that last part mean?
Let it pass, Lara. Sometimes you got to sacrifice a certain cogency for the sake of a good rhyme. If you do the rhyme, you must take the time.
Reverend Jackson, Terry Schiavo, as the whole world knows, did come to the end of her life this week. Mm-hmm. And in Rome, the Pope has died as well. Did you offer to fly over there to add your very considerable 2 cents to the proceedings in the Vatican?
As a matter of fact, Larry, I did. Mm. But they have their own way of doing things over there.
Yeah.
And it's not a hospice situation, so access becomes an issue.
Jesse, did you say a hostage situation? I was listening to something in my ear.
Hospice situation, Larry.
Yeah, of course.
And so I just felt that they had plenty of cardinals and other spiritual figures, and the network people had taken all the hotel rooms.
So, Reverend Jackson, from this distance, mm-hmm. is there anything you can say about the passing of Pope John Paul?
Larry, we were told in his last hours that the Pope was responding to his aids, even in the extremity of his condition.
Yeah.
Similarly, the Schiavos insisted that their daughter was responding to them in the extremity of her condition. Why did we find it so easy to believe the one and not the other? Maybe it's time for us to believe the people as much as we believe the papal.
Or maybe it's just that with all his problems, the Pope's brain hadn't turned to liquid.
Larry, when you look at the world today, and you see all the problems that people with solid cerebral cortexes have gotten us into, maybe a few more liquefied brains sitting at the table is not such a bad idea.
Reverend, this may seem like an off-the-wall question, but you're Jesse Jackson Jr.,
mm-hmm.
and the congressman from Chicago is Jesse Jackson III. Is there some kind of relationship there?
Yes, Larry. He's one of my many sons.
All right, I'm glad we got that cleared up. Jesse, our old friend Jerry Falwell was very sick this week as well. Did you give any thought to flying to his bedside?
I did, Larry, and thank you for asking. Yeah. But as you may have noticed, either because of the family's wishes or because of not enough crews to go around, there was no television coverage of Reverend Falwell's situation. So I thought it best not to intrude on his privacy, and going all that way not to be on television did seem, Larry, in all honesty, like it would be a waste of the taxpayers' money.
The taxpayers?
Yes, Larry, as you already pointed out, my son's a congressman.
Jesse, we got a great panel coming up on the meaning of the Pope to non-Catholics in our remaining moments. As you look back on the life and death of Terry Schiavo and your involvement in the case, what feelings are you experiencing?
A feeling of profound sadness, Larry, for these good people and for myself as well. I've experienced a loss, even though I never met the woman and didn't actually enter the hospice.
You're saying you were a hostage?
No, I'm not.
I'm sorry. They're yelling in my ear. But just to wrap it up, you are sad.
Yes, I am, Larry. I'm touched by a profound sadness.
At the loss of Terry.
At that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And at the fact that now I'm going to have to go back to praying with Michael Jackson. He's a brother who's hurting, and there are cameras in need. Still, in going from the severely unlucky to the severely yucky, there is but one ray of sunshine.
What's that?
I'm not going to have to fight for FaceTime with two fathers and a bishop.
Always looking on the bright side, Reverend Jesse Jackson. Jesse, we'll see you again soon.
Thank you, Larry. Can I keep the makeup on?
It's a free country. Friday night, Queen Noor of Jordan and Queen Latifah. Coming up that panel, and we'll be taking your calls, but we won't be giving out the numbers. Stay with us.
This is the Year in Rebuke, and one of the memorable moments in the entire month-long media scrum surrounding the late Terry Schiavo was the decision by Republican Senate leader Bill Frist, himself a physician, to enter the fray and deliver himself of a diagnosis about whether she was or wasn't in a persistent vegetative state based on watching 1 hour of video footage. I said 1 hour of video footage.
Time now for Dr. Manfred Weitzner and the Health File. Dr. Weitzner is both a doctor and an attorney, so if he sues himself, he wins. Now, Dr. Weitzner.
Thanks, Tim, and welcome again, dear listeners, to the sprawling exurban landscape of the Health File. And you know, friends, I've been getting asked all week long, Dr. Weitzner, what do you think should happen in the case of Terry Schiavo, the poor young woman who appears to be in a persistent vegetative state? Here's what I've said. If a vegetative state is good enough for vegetables, it may well be good enough for you and me. But ultimately, that's up to the docs involved. What I can say without fear of contraindication is that a case like Terry should be treated with megadoses of vitamin L for love, vitamin H for hope, and most important of all, vitamin I for insurance.
You're listening to Dr. Manfred Weitzner and the Health File. You can text message comments to Dr. Weitzner, but under no circumstances can you be added to his buddy list. Once again, Dr. Weitzner.
Thank you, Tim. We'll all be watching for you in the Redondo Beach Little Theater production of Mark Twain Tonight. Tim will be playing the role of Hal Holbrook. My friends, as the Terry Schiavo case winds towards its almost inevitable conclusion, anxious cable viewers are turning to the medical profession for answers the docs just can't provide with certainty. At least most docs can't, but there are new tools coming along that allow those of us who labor in the verdant fields of the Health File to be far more certain of what we think we think. At least that's the contention of my guest today. He's professor of faith-based medicine at Jim Huckabee University in Anniston, Alabama, Dr. Alan Boyce. Dr. Boyce, welcome to the probing embrace of the Health File.
Thank you, Dr. Weitzner. It's a blessing to be here.
Well, let's withhold that particular judgment until we see whether the parking people honor your validation. Dr. Boyce, you're a practitioner of what you've termed the Bill Frist School of Medicine. What exactly does that entail?
Well, as you know, most people became aware of this particular branch of the medical family when Senator Frist, whom we still think of as Dr. Frist in the faith-based medical community, announced his diagnosis of Terry Schiavo's condition based on his viewing of some videotape of her.
It was about an hour, as I recall.
Well, however much it was, Dr. Weitzner, it was a blessing. Mm-hmm. Had Terry suffered something like a bulimia-induced heart episode a century ago, still black-and-white photographs would be the closest we could have come to allowing every citizen to diagnose her for him or herself.
Well, from that standpoint, a blessing indeed. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Boyce, there's been a certain amount of grumbling among the more conventionally credentialed inhabitants of the Health File regarding the reliability of diagnosis via videotape. No. For example, if I presented with a skin lesion, video wouldn't necessarily allow you to discern its texture or its dimensions. It could be a benign keratosis or a malignant melanoma as far as the camera is concerned, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm glad you framed that as a question, Dr. Weitzner, because even though we would always love to have MRIs or EEGs or whatever you call them, the existence of videotape and our ability to sit there and watch it again and watch it in slow-mo and rewind it and everything. You just can't do that with a so-called reality-based patient experience.
Well, Doctor, just for the more skeptical among those who huddle inside the protective broadcast penumbra of the Health File, Jim Huckabee University is accredited?
Oh, yes, sir. It's accredited by the Bob Jones Accreditation Institute. That's the gold standard of faith-based accreditation.
All right. So when you are denied the opportunity to palpate and so forth with a living, breathing patient, and what you're examining instead is an image on the TV screen, what are the possible limitations on your diagnosing acuity?
Well, I think Dr. Frist pioneered in the use of brightness and sharpness controls to give the examining physician a far sharper and, yes, a brighter view of the patient. Mm-hmm. Again, if you were to examine the patient in so-called person, you're limited by the visual conditions of that particular facility.
Yeah.
So I think I speak for many of us in the blessing-based medical community when I say that, as Fristians, we believe the video examination
is superior.
Now, of course, just to be sure we're all on the same page here in the ream of stationery inside the hanging folder of the health file, these video examinations, unlike videos we might watch in our homes, don't have commercials or previews of coming attractions, so there's no question of distraction or the loss of concentration, anything that might rattle the doc.
No, sir. Usually these are home shot tapes, and one thing you realize as you labor in the vineyard of Fristian video diagnosis is just how good so many of God's children have gotten in the framing, the lighting, the shooting of home video.
So no camera shaking, no in and out of focus.
Dr. Whiteson, we don't even see those in videos we receive from sub-equatorial countries. So the blessings of good camera work have have indeed been sown as seeds on the wind.
And that's a good way of sowing blessings?
Oh, it is indeed.
Still, there are those within the more reality-based precincts of conventional medicine who, while denying the mind-body connection, still protest that video images are only two-dimensional, while the actual body enjoys at least three.
Well, this is why it's such a gift to be alive in these days, Dr. Weitzner. Already, high-definition cameras are becoming commonplace as we experience the digital video revolution. These are images so clear and so crisp that they'll actually allow us to read the nurse's name badge from 25 feet away.
And that's a good thing?
Oh, it's just the beginning. I think God has in mind for us 3D HD, and with tools like that, I believe we'll be able to perform diagnoses that will literally take your breath away.
Well, not literally. That would require ventilators, wouldn't it?
I suppose for the language base, that would be correct.
Dr. Boyce, have you actually performed a Fristian diagnosis yourself and developed a course of treatment based on it? I think that would be of great interest to our fellow denizens of the health fund.
I haven't really, Dr. Weitzner, but I did get the opportunity to see Dr. Frist's video diagnosis of Mrs. Shivo on videotape. I know this has been a stressful situation for the senator, too. But I've never seen him look better. He looks relaxed. He looks youthful and healthy.
State we all aspire to inside the aspirational bracket of the health file. Dr. Boyce, thank you so much for dropping by and informing us about Fristian diagnosis. It looks like another reason not to throw away the television set.
Oh, it was my blessing.
So, friends, time too quickly brings this program to its terminal state. Wishing you loads of vitamin S. See you next week. I'm Dr. Manfred Weitzner, escorting you out through the manila doorway of the Health File. So long.
And just last week, ladies and gentlemen, Condoleezza Rice embarked upon a trip to Europe, taking a tough line on the subject of torture and renditions. And on this program, although people in Philadelphia on Sirius Satellite Radio and on the podcast didn't hear it, we speculated on the reason for that shift in her position, and looked for a subterranean explanation from Dick Cheney Confidential.
There are times of the year, spring, summer, early fall, late winter, when a guy's got to get out of the secure and disclosed location if he doesn't want to become crucially disconnected with facts upstairs on the ground. But as that hippie song, Turn, 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 said it best, it's also a season for staying in the secure undisclosed. The icy winds of late fall are one reason. So is the bad weather. Any neighborhood has its bad guys, and Washington, D.C. has the Democrats. Apparently they were intoxicated by a momentary lack of fear of seeming soft on terrorism, and our poll numbers were taking a worse beating than the clients of the Abu Ghraib night shift. The brain trusted Oval, Carl, Andy, Karen, assigned me to a little account called Public Pushback. But, and I hate false modesty, I've never done my best work in the glare of the spotlight, or for that matter in the light of day. So while Lynn supervised the Navy SEALs busy decorating the tree in the front compartment, I was in my private space, licking some wounds and planning some strategy with my old cabal mate from the Pentagon-shaped complex, Donnie the Rum. It was a peculiar tonic for the soul,
compared to Donnie. Even my mood seemed sunny. Friday, 3:17 p.m.
You see, Dick, here's my problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with the plan as far as it goes. Mm-hmm. Pull our troops out and attack the hell out of anyone calling it a pullout. Sure, but don't we get to a point about the mid-non-pullout phase where we're too weak to defend ourselves? Isn't that what the dead-enders are waiting for?
Don't ask me, Donnie. I don't do uniforms. What do you think?
I don't know, and I don't know what I don't know.
Well, my friend, here's what I know. Next time you guys want to get stuff in the Iraqi newspapers, buy some friggin' ads. It's one thing to look bad at governing, but when we look like amateurs at public relations, might as well fold the shingle and shut up shop.
Look, Dick, maybe you don't have half the people under you holding secret conversations with Seymour Hersh, but I do. That I do know. Those are the wheels I'm trying to keep on the wagon.
Yes, sir. And all I've got is Colin's ex-chief of staff calling me a war criminal, fitting me for a Hague jumpsuit, while Andy and Carl are freezing me out of the new passwords, so...
Mr. Vice President, Secretary Rice to see you.
Thanks, Admiral. Donnie, make with a scram.
Okay, but...
Look, if I wanted butts, I wouldn't have married Lynn.
I got you.
Okay, Admiral. Send her in.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Vice President, I hope I'm neither early nor late.
And then she walked in. Her hair was flipped harder than a Ukrainian pancake. Her lips were more sensuous than two nights in Vegas. And to top off the whole package, there was that come-hither gap between her two front teeth that could drive a grown man colorblind. Oh, Miss Condoleezza Rice had the whole package, all right. But I knew her little secret. Underneath all that hot sauce was a big pond of cold soup. Today, that soup was going to be stirred and shaken.
Mr. Vice President, did I just miss Secretary Rumsfeld? That's not your aquavelva I'm smelling.
Condi, if I were in the business of making the names of my guests public, Bob Woodward's name would have shown up on the White House visitor's log. I assume you'd prefer this little rendezvous to be similarly underdocumented.
I appreciate the assumption.
I'd invite you to sit down, even if I didn't want to see you cross your legs.
Thank you.
So, you're off to Europe.
Matter of fact, I am. Seems there's a little fire there that needs putting out, and I'm the administration's first responder.
Well, anything that shuts the breeder's yaps gets my instant respect.
Well, you're not going to like this, Mr. Vice President, but I think I have to do some pretty heavy listening while I'm over there.
Oh, are brave friends and allies upset over the pictures on the Euro again?
I'm afraid not. They're more than a little upset about the black prison sites.
Strange, Condi.
What's that?
Hearing you say the word black as if it's a bad thing.
The countries where we have the black sites are embarrassed. The countries where we've refueled extraordinary rendition flights are embarrassed.
You know, here we've been working all this time on bird flu.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me like we got a pandemic of embarrassment on our hands.
I know it doesn't mean all that much to you, but I have spent the last few months painstakingly repairing our relationships with the European nations.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships damaged rather badly by your friend and mine, Aquavelva Boy. It's important to us all that that hard work doesn't go down the torture toy.
Condi, I see why the president likes you so much. You're like a Barbara Bush who can play the piano. Now look, it breaks my secure and disclosed heart that you've spent 7 months holding the hands of timorous tea sippers. I've been running the Iraq account for years, and all that hard work is jeopardized by, among other things, this whining from the peanut gallery. Now look, here are your talking points for the European trip, Miss Rice.
Dick, we can't continue to treat our closest allies like Like hicks at a carnival ride. We can't just tell them, strap in and shut up.
They don't have to strap in. But you're right about one thing, Condi. We're not going to treat our closest allies like that. You are.
Dick, please. I'd lose all credibility if I go over there and defend torture.
It hasn't hurt my credibility any.
You're at 30%.
Exactly. It didn't drive me down to 20. As for losing all credibility, Miss Condi, what's the name of your position again?
Secretary of State.
Yeah, my reading of some recent history is that the credibility of that office is something we get to spend. You read the same history?
I have a slightly different relationship with the president than the previous occupant of this office. I'm willing to use it.
I like people who threaten me. It's a bracing feeling. Like Equivelva in the morning. Condi, correct me if I'm wrong, but our base has never had its interest piqued by your status as a lifelong bachelorette, have they?
Your grammar's a little tortured, too. But you wouldn't go to the media with something that pathetic. That would really drive your credibility down to 20.
As you may have noticed, I don't say or do anything around here. That's why the good Lord made Scooter Libby and his successor. Although, I do owe Bob Woodward a call.
Dick, I must say, I think you're overplaying your hand here. The president isn't exactly beaming with satisfaction over your handling of the Iraq account.
Oh, I guess I'll just have to work a little harder to earn Monkey Boy's respect. Oh, excuse me, I misspoke. I meant Monkey Boy in chief. Well, Miss Rice, has it finally sunk in that around this shop, secretaries of state are expected to be good little soldiers? Because I have the feeling you look like a minion in a uniform.
Dick, I'll hold the line, but I can't push back too hard. I just can't.
The elevator ride back up is a long one. I'm sure you'll use the time to think of a way to push back extra hard.
Just one move, Dick. In a long game.
Yep. Colin thinks he's still playing, too. Cigar for the road. Nothing beats the flavor of converted rice. Candy should know better than anyone that making friends can only take you so far. Then you have to make some enemies. End a partial diary for early December 2005. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 And ladies and gentlemen, that concludes part one of the Year in Rebuke here on the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout you. You know the whole list. And it'll be just like having a whole year to make fun of if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The email address for this program is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. I'll see you this week in the pages of the Huffington Post at Eat the Press. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.